In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, let's talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us here in studio. Hello, Mr. Adams.
Hello, sir.
How was your weekend?
It was good, actually.
You were at camp,
right? We went to camp.
Nice.
It was actually, believe it or not, mid-July. First time out there this season. Yep. We went out, opened the place up a little bit, and didn't really do much. Just basically hung out. But,
perfect.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Had a good book. That's always a nice way to spend some time sitting on the porch by lakeside, you know, having some getting some sun. I waited until noon before I cracked my first beer. I felt like that was the responsible thing to do.
Yeah.
It's funny too. The book, I got an advanced copy of the Boss Man's new one.
Oh.
It's a book called Billy Summers, and it's very good. Very, very good. And I look forward to sharing my thoughts about it later on down the road. We went out, we got in the water. Stella, not a water dog.
Ginger's the same way.
You know, it's we give it a shot every year. We just like, and it's just like we try to walk her into the water, and she's like, nope, not doing that. So I'll scoop her up and I'll walk her out, like, you know, so she's like chest high, like, you know, she can touch bottom and all that stuff. And I'll put her down, and she will immediately trot back to the shore and shake off and be like, I dare you to try that again.
Yeah, please don't do that. You know, why did you do that to me?
The look of betrayal.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's just nice to get away for a little bit, you know, just sort of disconnect a little bit. We had a lovely time, and we're looking forward to heading back down there, sometime in the next couple of weeks.
That's awesome. Well, you got to see some movies too, three of them this week.
I did. Yeah. Where would you like to start?
Oh my. I don't know. Surprise us.
Okay. Well, we'll start with this one. This is the, this movie was, on Netflix. It's called The Last Letter from Your Lover. It's a romance, original to the streamer. And it's based on a novel of the same name by Jojo Moyes. And it's, you know, this sort of story about, the nature of love and a dueling timelines kind of situation. Those are always fun. We had the added bonus of we actually set up a bit of a screening situation at camp, and so we downloaded the movie because there's zero internet, but we downloaded the movie and we were able to watch it projected on a much larger screen than a movie like this really warrants. we had a really good time. It stars Felicity Jones, Shailene Woodley. The basic gist is Jones plays a reporter. A journalist in London, and she's assigned to do this story, goes to the archives and accidentally uncovers a misfiled letter. And it's a love note of sorts. And she becomes fascinated with trying to find out who this person is, where this letter came from. The archivist tells her that it has been misfiled and that he will help her look for other stuff. And so we then flash back into the roughly the mid-60s, where we meet Jennifer Sterling, played by Shailene Woodley, who is I guess you'd call her a trophy wife of sorts. She's married to a very wealthy man named Lawrence, played by Joe Alwyn. Very much a seen and not heard kind of situation. And we learn that she is suffering from amnesia after an accident. And she can't quite put together how she feels about her situation, despite everyone around her telling her, when everyone's telling you that you're very happy and you don't feel very happy, you have some questions. And so we then flash back a few months prior to that, and we sort of get the real story, which is Jennifer has met a foreign correspondent by the name of Anthony, played by Colin Turner. And Yes, he's supposed to interview her rich, her wealthy businessman husband, but circumstances lead to them sort of establishing a friendship and then a correspondence. And, well, you know how things can progress in those situations. And so this exchange of letters is what our present day journalist, Ellie, has uncovered. And so we sort of move back and forth between these two timelines, with the letters serving as sort of the bridge each time that we sort of transition. It's fine. Like, it's, I mean, it was pleasant enough. I'm, you know, like, again, I'm on record as, you know, understanding that the Netflix churn results in, a few really good movies, a few really bad movies, and then a lot of movies that are sort of in that muddy middle. And this is in that middle, although I would say that it probably leans more towards the good end of the spectrum. Because, you know, the performances are good. Felicity Jones and Shailene Woodley are both very talented, and they do good work here. I will say the production design, particularly when we're in the 60s period, is good. Like, and that's something I always kind of keep an eye on in these sorts of period pieces. You know, a lot of directors will just be like, oh, well, get a couple of, 57 Chevys in there and we'll call it good. But they did a really good job of sort of recreating the vibe, both in terms of, like, just across the board. The art direction is really good, you know. And is the plot a little predictable? Sure. But, you know, when you're watching a movie like this, it's not like you're expecting to be surprised. And there's something comforting about watching and knowing how it's going to go, but still being invested enough in the characters, thanks to the performances, to care, to see it through. And it's that kind of movie. Like, it's, we'll put it this way. If you're a fan of this sort of film, you won't feel obligated to return it to sender.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, let's save Shyamalan for last.
Okay. So I went to see Snake Eyes, original title, Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe, Origins. I didn't have huge expectations of this movie. As someone who grew up in the mid-80s, I was a G.I. Joe kid. Like, I had the action figures and the vehicles. I watched the cartoons. Like, I read the comic books, like, all that stuff. And, you know, was it a sort of a way to make the American imperialistic mindset more palatable to children? Sure, I acknowledge that. But they had Kung Fu Grip, you know, and so as a 10-year-old, you're willing to make those sorts of changes. Yes. Trades. But yeah, so I always have had a soft spot in my heart for that. And so, like, even the movies that came out the earlier part of this decade, I believe it was, what were they called? G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, and then G.I. Joe Retaliation. Like, Channing Tatum was in them and, like, stuff like that. And, like, they were bad, but I watched them and they were fine. So I'm like, okay, so I'm gonna watch Snake Eyes and we'll see what happens. You know, it's a yet another effort to create a sort of G.I. Joe cinematic universe. And then I watched the movie and it was okay. Like, you know, and it's the sort of movie where, like, if you tilt your head and squint a little bit, it's actually pretty good. At least for the first hour or so, it really was pretty solid. So, as the working title suggests, this is the origin story of Snake Eyes, the beloved G.I. Joe character. He's played by Henry Golding, who's wonderful. Basically, we get the origin. We get to see him. As a child, he witnesses the tragic death of his father, and so he devotes his life to figuring out a way to avenge said murder. He winds up being an underground bare knuckle fighting drifter, because that's what happens in these sorts of situations. Sure. And so he's doing that. He's moving from town to town, fighting in the apparently very robust underground no holds barred fighting leagues. When he's discovered by a gentleman by the name of Kenta, who enlists Snake Eyes, and he goes by Snake Eyes for I'm not even going to tell you why. You'll like it. They show you in the first few minutes of the movie, but you know what? You can watch it and you'll find out for yourself. It's pretty straightforward. So he gets enlisted, and it turns out that this guy Kenta works for the Yakuza, and Snake Eyes is like helping him, smuggle guns and drugs through the ports, the docks of L.A. But one day he's asked to take out one of his friends, this sort of punk, this thug named Tommy, played by, and I want to get the name right because he's very, very good. His name is Andrew Koji is the guy's name. He's supposed to kill this guy. He won't do it. And so Snake Eyes and Tommy wind up fighting off hordes of Yakuza guys with, some with guns, but, a surprising number with like wrenches and pipes. It's like not a particularly prepared gang of Japanese thugs, but whatever. Snake Eyes gets hurt in trying to save Tommy's life. And then he wakes up on a private plane. Turns out Tommy is the heir to this clan of the secretive clan of people who are basically committed to defeating evil and protecting this secret sort of the powerful secret. And Tommy wants Snake Eyes to join the clan. There are doubts, but he gets brought in, and then Rich. Things get complicated. I'm going to leave it at that because, the storyline, there's a lot of storyline that plays out here. But I will say one of the things that I actually really dug about this movie is the fact that when you're clearly trying to build a franchise, like sometimes these movies can turn into I've seen them referred to as homework movies. Where you have to know all this other stuff when you're watching right. to really grasp it. And for the first hour and change of this movie, like you don't need any of that. Like it's just other than a little bit, a couple bits of iconography and some character names. Like it's pretty much what you it's pretty straightforward action movie. The action sequences are pretty good. Golding is good. And as I said, Koji is great. Like he's I'd never seen this guy before, but he's a phenomenal, phenomenal actor, in terms of, emotive, in the emotive sense and in his physicality. Like, so that's a very rare combo. In the back half, we start, it's like, the crates with the Cobra stamp on them. and we started getting introduced to characters like the Baroness shows up and the one other G.I. Joe character, Scarlet, shows up in this one. She's played by Samara Weaving, which was kind of a surprise. Like she's very good. It'll be interesting to see what she does going forward as far as the franchise is concerned. But yeah, it was fun. Like I really expected it to be a little bit of a slog, but thanks to Golding, who's a legit movie star. Like it's one of those things where. It's remarkable because for me, and I know British audiences were aware of him. He was a TV presenter for a while and that sort of thing. But for me, like he basically just dropped out of the sky in Crazy Rich Asians, and he's just sort of been on a roll ever since. I think he's very charismatic. He's got he's got that movie star look, and he's got the physical capabilities of handling the sort of action stuff in a way that a lot of guys don't. Necessarily have. So it was fun. Like I enjoyed watching it. I question the viability of a long-term franchise as far as G.I. Joe is concerned. Like you've already taken a swing at this not so long ago and it didn't work out particularly well. But again, like this movie's certainly better than either of the two previous iterations. So, we'll wait and see. And if they can find, a good hook to sort of hang their hats on, I think they've got a shot at making something happen. And at the very least, like, you won't regret the time spent watching Snake Eyes, especially if you're a fan of either, G.I. Joe or action movies in general.
I think they should build a film around the Frogman G.I. Joe, which was my favorite as a kid. I was so excited to get that. The flippers and the mask, the tanks. It was awesome.
I'm waiting for the Action Jackson franchise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would watch that. Alan Adams with us here on Downtown. All right. Let's get the lowdown on Old, number one at the box office.
So, and anyone who's listening right now probably is aware of the basic premise of Old, because it has been a subject of some hilarity in the various social media circles. But the basic gist is, what if there was this beach, only when you went there, you got old really fast? Like that, and it's just, see, here's the thing, and I say this as someone who has genuine love in his heart for the work of M. Night Shyamalan. Like, he had, you know, he started strong, there was a very significant lull in there, but he sort of became ascendant again. I kind of start with The Visit back in 2017. Like, that sort of marked an upswing for him as far as kind of climbing out of the doldrums of stuff like Lady in the Water and that movie where someone in the elevator is the devil. But that's the thing. And, you know, someone in the elevator is the devil. Like, that's basically, like, that's shorthand for every M. Night Shyamalan pitch. Like, it's everyone sounds ludicrous on its face. And it's like, you just imagine him going into a room and being like, okay, so there's this beach. And everybody gets old really fast. And you just have to wonder, and it's like, you know, if you're a studio exec, you're like, I don't really know what's going on, but I mean, people go see these, so I guess we just write him a check.
So, yeah, does the studio guy say, why would they go to the beach then? Or does the studio guy say, yeah, but what's the twist at the end?
Well, and that's the thing, and I would argue this it has a, you know, it has an interesting ending. I would not go so far as to call it the same. It's not the same sort of twist that I think we've come to sort of expect from, you know, it's a left turn, but it's not a twist, all if right. that makes sense. But yeah, the basic gist is this family goes to this wonderful, beautiful tropical resort. And it's a married couple. A guy named Guy, played by Gail Bernal. And Priska, played by Vicky Creeps, and they've got their two young kids. They've got a young son named Trent and a daughter named Maddox. And they go to this resort, and it's lovely, and like their whims are being catered to. It's really just this beautiful, beautiful place. The day after they arrive, the hotel manager kind of comes up to them, and he's like, "Hey, listen, you know." I don't talk to, you know, I don't share this with everybody, but there's this really wonderful private beach. Like the other half of the island is a nature preserve, and so it's largely off limits. But there's this wonderful private beach. I don't tell everyone about it, but if you folks seem like you would really enjoy it and appreciate it, so if you want to go, the bus leaves at, you know, the bus is leaving at this time, and so they're like, great, that sounds wonderful. You know, they climb on the bus, and then another group comes on, and they sort of have the banter about, oh, I thought this was, you know, supposed to be some secret, whatever. But this other group it's a doctor, played by Rufus Sewell, and his young wife and his elderly mother and his daughter, his young daughter. I think she's the same age as the other couple's son. They're both six. And they go to the beach. The driver, because he can't resist, is M. Night Shyamalan himself, because doesn't he love putting himself in, in these movies? I totally get it. It's a very low impact role, just as he tends to do. So they all go, they load up, with their supplies. You know, the first hint you have that something's a little amiss is the bus driver gives them just a tremendous amount of food to take with them. Like, just like just huge baskets filled with food. And everyone's like, well, I mean, we're only going to be here for a few hours. Why do we need so much food? And the bus driver says something along the lines of, well, you know, these kids, they're growing. They need to have plenty to eat. They make their way through this little canyon onto what is an admittedly just stunning beach. But they get there, and then, you know, stuff starts getting weird. A body washes up on the shore. It turns out there's another guy who's already there. We discover later, is a fairly well-known rap artist who goes by the name, I swear to God, Rich, Mid-Sized Sedan.
Okay.
And so the we get the beach and everything's lovely, and then a body turns up, and then the kids start growing, like they start getting older, like very, very quickly, and before we know it, we've all figured out that time goes faster on the beach, so the kids grow up, and all of a sudden they're teenagers. And, and the other people, they're both aging, but, wounds heal faster because everything is moving faster.
Sure.
But some of these people have, pretty significant medical issues, and those issues are exacerbated by the rapid passage of time. And, as it turns out, they can't really leave the beach because of reasons. Like they sort of hand wave away the reasons why they can't,
but thing they got all that food.
Well. For now, Rich.
Oh.
And then things play out. I don't know. I can't really go any farther without starting to spoil some stuff. I know I'm making light of a lot of this, and a lot of it is pretty silly. And there's one particular plot development that I actually found pretty off-putting. I'm not going to go into details about it. You will 100% know it when you see it. One of those things where it's like, I get what you're going for here, M. Night, but I think it was unnecessary. it's got a good cast. He is, say what you will about M. Night Shyamalan. Like he is someone who really understands the language, like the visual language of film. Like he has a really good eye. And so you get some really wonderful shots. And I acknowledge that his plotting can be a little clunky. He did write the screenplay for this, but it's not an original idea. It's an adaptation of a French graphic novel, which is one of the first times, if not the first time, that he wrote a screenplay that wasn't that an adaptation. Like his it's usually original stuff. And so there are some hiccups in the story, but like the performances are really solid. Once you buy into the sort of basic conceit, you can really sort of go along for the ride, and you get hints at, some sort of darker, kind of overarching thing, but there's the reveals. He pieces out, like he sort of doles out his revelations, pretty slowly. Before we get to the aforementioned left turn at the end. Like, I dug it. Like, it's not his best work by any means, but like he has made plenty of movies that are far worse than this one. People can have their fun, and again, like, I acknowledge fully that it is a ridiculous concept on its face. But he has managed to turn that ridiculous concept into a pretty solid movie. Like there are some real thrills and some real, some wonderful ideas that are built around, finds this sort of body horror kind of vibe that springs from the nature, the notion of aging and, the deterioration of ourselves as we grow older.
And I can say, there's no comedy in that.
Right. Well, and it just like, and you get, and, the rapid fire aging and healing and all that stuff really leaves a lot of room for some pretty, pretty gruesome moments, but moments that are, they're not gratuitously so. They're pretty compelling. If it's not your bag, it's not your bag. I get it. But for me, like I was actually pleasantly surprised by the good time that I had at this movie.
I'll check it out. I like his work, most of it.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks, Alan.
Hey, my pleasure.
We'll see you on Wednesday.
You sure will.